Bibbidi Bobbidi Drop It. Hey, everybody. It's Friday, and this is the Young Turks. Jank's still gone. I'm here, Johnny DiRola. Ben and Michael joining me for what should be a good first hour, I think.
We always say that before the show, though.
So we always say that. We're hopeful people.
It's going to be a great hour. Oh, it's going to be an awesome hour. It can't be that every time.
But sometimes we're lying because we look at the rundown, we know it's weak. But
I think that's true. That's a good point. Today's a fine lineup.
We've got some serious stuff, and then we also have something that has no purpose being on the rundown, except that I'm leading the show, and so I get to put it there. So nice. It'll be fun, though. That'll be our dessert if we get through all the important topical policy stuff. Yeah, it has nothing to do with video games.
I love Game of Thrones.
It doesn't have anything to do with it. I have more than two interests. I have three, and this is the third one.
Okay, so you struck out.
Electric cars.
Have you heard about the Tesla Roadster? Come on, everybody. I know there's a lot of haters of electric cars
out there. Walmart and JB Hunt have ordered them already.
Really?
Yeah, they're getting big corporate orders for these things. Yeah.
Now, look, I know that Tesla's new, the truck and the Roadster is not going to convince people necessarily that they need to switch over because the Roadster is going to cost $1 billion. But But when you see that this car can go more than 600 miles on a charge and has a 0 to 60 of 1.9 seconds, how can you deny that the future is electric?
Okay, now it's going to be a great show.
I'm excited. Okay, I'm going to get one of those someday. Anyway, let's jump into the big news then. Unfortunately, we're going from electric cars to something related but sadder. Yesterday, there was an environmental disaster that literally no one could have predicted. No one did predict it, actually. And it has to do with the Keystone Pipeline. It actually had a spill. The oil that's supposed to travel inside of it got out somehow, which seems impossible. I know it's made of metal, but it actually happened. The pipeline leaked Thursday morning, spilling about 5,000 barrels of oil or 210,000 gallons of oil southeast of the small town of Amherst in northeast South Dakota. It's like a logic puzzle to figure out where in South Dakota that is. But anyway, the pipeline has also had other smaller spills, by the way. 400 barrels each in 2011 and 2016, all in that same area, actually. In response to the reports coming out that spill had actually happened, TransCanada said it shut down the flow of oil in the pipeline at 6 a.m. Quote, after a drop in pressure was detected in its operating system resulting from an oil leak that is under investigation. They give the rough idea, basically, of where it had happened there. And I know it's like, what do you say at a time like this? The oil got out in the ground.
Yeah,
it seemed like such a sure thing.
Well, it was a sure thing. It leaked.
It did leak, and it leaks all the time. And so they're talking about this leak, and there were the two similar size leaks. But we did a story 6 months ago. I think it was in Oklahoma. I'm not 100% sure there. Maybe you can find the video of the hundreds and hundreds of not reported leaks that have happened throughout
Missouri. I think there was Missouri or Arkansas. Actually,
it might have been somewhere around there. But it's just a routine thing now. It's not necessarily always 210,000 gallons. But jokes aside, we've been saying the whole time, leak after leak after leak, we come back and say, hey, maybe this is inherently a dangerous way to fuel an economy. There's not a lot of damage done routinely from solar or wind leaks, okay? Maybe your hair gets messed up a bit, but that's about it.
Well, easy, partner.
It's a disaster for Ben.
It depends on the day.
Yeah.
The other thing here, and I have no expertise to lend to this, except that the number of times that a company has reported a leak and then that leak has been an accurate depiction of the leak, zero.
Right. Yes.
I mean, so when they say, I hope it's true, but when they say generally 210,000 gallons, it turns out it's 2,210,000 gallons.
Yeah, God only knows.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the general operating procedure in environmental disasters like this, energy company disasters. I mean, look, we all saw the China Syndrome.
Of course. Well, John didn't. But.
Right. It's a film. No, you downplay
it's like a car
it.
Chase and
so I hope that that when we hear the truth about the leak, that it is no greater than that. But I wouldn't be surprised.
But they say they explain it away too. They say, well, this was caused by something that was installed improperly. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, right. That's what can happen if you have that. And then they said, based on what we know, and you'll probably get to this, John, but based on what we know, it hasn't affected the water table or the base.
That's
of water.
That's what they say.
Right. Based on what we know. But it could have. Mm-hmm. But here's when it wouldn't if it weren't there in the first place.
Yeah, look, if there was evidence that it had happened in the first 24 hours that it affected the water, fine. But I'm not simply going to trust that because you haven't detected right. in the first hour, we're good. And I know that the tribal council in the area has put out, they're talking about working with the federal authorities to try to contain this because obviously they feel responsible for that area, although they are not responsible for that pipe. That's TransCanada that does that. But there's a huge water reservoir there, in that area. Not a reservoir technically, but there's the body of water that could potentially be contaminated. And I'm glad that you brought up that, it was just because of a ring that was wrong or there was a bad seam. But when we said that this was going to happen, what did you think we thought was going to happen? That the pipe was evil and wanted to spill?
Yeah, but they kept on.
There's going to be some sort of mechanical failure.
Part of selling this is knowing that we expect there to be a leak so that then when there is a leak, they can blame it on something or say, look, there are a few leaks here and there. That's right. Part of getting this thing working. That's mm-hmm. But when it's a catastrophe, then you can't really use that argument. Yeah. So that's why it's so critical to undersell the catastrophic part of this to make it seem like, hey, this is a problem, we're fixing it, but this is routine. This is what happens when you have a pipeline.
Yeah.
No one after the Challenger blew up would say, it was just a little problem with the O-rings.
Right? All we
need to do is tighten the O-rings and then it's fine.
Yeah.
Except 7 astronauts are dead, and so you can't make that argument.
Yeah. Exactly.
With some tiles too, I think. Some tiles.
Yeah, I think that was actually what it was. Yes. No, but I'm not an expert.
It was the O-ring, but it was the tiles that...
Right, but because the O-ring was not sufficient, I think caused
now
the failure of the
tile. Now we're getting into John territory with this conversation.
Appreciate that. Anyway, let's jump back into this because obviously this spill is in its own right a terrible thing, although inevitable, and we will see others. At some point, we'll all be back here, maybe all three. We'll be sitting here and we'll be talking about the next 300,000 gallon leak or the next 2 million gallon leak. Or maybe we'll be talking about the endangered species that were killed in this particular leak. For now, though, we have this one, and it comes at a particularly interesting time, actually, when it comes to these pipelines and TransCanada. So if you bring up this map here, you're going to see the darker line there, the black line, that is the Keystone pipeline. And if you see as it crosses through South Dakota, roughly about halfway down through South Dakota is where it spilled. But you also see those other colored lines there, and that's where we get into Keystone XL, the expansion pipeline that was rejected by President Obama. And what's interesting about that is, although after his election, President Trump issued an executive order to clear obstacles so that that could be made, it's not just up to him. Actually, TransCanada still needed a permit from an independent 5-person Nebraska Public Service Commission at some point in the future. Actually, it turns out it's just in the next couple of days. They're going to be ruling on this in just a few days to see whether Keystone XL should actually forward.
I do not like people who speculate without knowing, and I know nothing about this. But man, given the timing, right? It just reminded me when I read this the first time that given the timing, the incentive to lie and to undersell the leak is overwhelming right now.
I thought you were going to predict sabotage.
But I don't think you can undersell this leak. I mean, the mere fact that there was a leak that spilled 210,000 gallons of oil, I think should be enough for a commission that, by the way, was already, they weren't just behind this Keystone thing mm-hmm. entirely. You pointed out that President Obama, blocked it and
yeah, but he didn't really mean it.
Right. And that's why Trump, of course, didn't. But also Secretary Clinton, when she was running for president, said finally, even though a lot of people didn't buy it at first, that she was not in favor mm-hmm. of the pipeline. And so, when pressed, she didn't come out against it. What's that?
They're the same.
They're the same, right. Yeah, of course they are. They're exactly the same. Never mind. So it doesn't matter.
Okay, let's get back to the pipeline. Yeah. So, you're right.
Stein.
Sorry. We got a tragedy here, people. Okay. They're considering the possibility of finally approving that the XL expansion to this pipeline, which is a problem, not just because it creates more pipeline that can have fault points like this that could lead to more spills like this, but it means that overall more oil will actually be pulled out of the ground and transported and burned. And that's really one of the problems here is that the particular type of fuel that we're talking about that these pipelines are transporting is not just the normal bad for the environment fuel. It's particularly polluty and bad for you type of oil. Maybe we should leave some of it in the ground. That would be a good idea. Now the question is, After this, will there be more pressure on the Public Service Commission to shut this down? I don't know. I assume that at some point, considering that Donald Trump, I looked back and he has tweeted over the past 6 years or so about the Keystone XL pipeline, literally dozens and dozens of times. He returns this. This is long before he was running for president. He was pushing for this thing. And we can go back through just a couple of his tweets that are very particular to what happened yesterday. He said in August of 2015, if I am elected president, I will immediately approve the Keystone XL pipeline. No impact on environment and lots of jobs for US. If I remember correctly, the estimate of the number of permanent jobs that would be produced by the Keystone XL pipeline was between 40 and 45. At the time, it was described as a Denny's worth of jobs, which is great. I love Denny's and I love 36 jobs, but I don't know that that's necessarily merits a presidential tweet.
And where he says no impact on the environment is great too, because based on what they know, John, it hasn't touched the water.
Hasn't touched it. And he also said this, so sad that Obama rejected Keystone Pipeline, thousands of jobs, good for the environment, no downside. And so look, this comes after leaks in the Keystone Pipeline. This was not like, hey, maybe everything will be rosy. They already knew that this system wasn't being properly maintained. And so should we have any faith that he will learn from this particular leak and perhaps put some pressure on the Public Service Commission to shut it down? I sincerely doubt that at this point.
I don't think we need to worry because Jeff Sessions is going to investigate these leaks and get to the bottom of it. by the way, the Kim McIntosh, environmental scientist at the South Dakota Department of Environment Natural Resources, says in describing it, says as described, it's not a tiny leak by any means. And the last spill in the pipeline, about 400 barrels of oil in Hutchinson County in April 2016, took about 10 months to clean up.
And they've had a couple of those, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of those around 400 barrels.
She said this will take much, much longer than 10 months to clean up. 20 months, she can't predict. I can't predict whether it will take 20 months or 12 months. So even as described, a major spill.
Yeah, and like you said, there's every possibility that in a few days or in a week, or 6 months, we'll find out that it was far worse. I mean,
well, the president's right in one sense because the jobs that these spills create in cleaning them up.
That's true.
Unbelievable,
right?
I mean, this is a real job boon to have this oil spill out all over the place because you need people to come in and clean it up.
Yeah, look, I have to say we've been reporting on these particular pipelines for what feels like years at this point, and the massive opposition to them I found to be inspirational for a long time. The fact that Obama was pushed to not allow the expansion, that there's been a lot of debate inside of Canada about it, that the economy is changing in ways that it became at least temporarily not profitable to do this sort of extraction. But they are rushing now. They see the day when people realize and it becomes more economically feasible. It's already economically feasible to do solar and wind. But they see that day rapidly coming where there will be no room left in the market for them. And it's clear that they want to extract every drop of money, not oil, money that they can in the meantime. And the problem is that when you're just rushing to do it, not only are you more likely to have spills like this, but the carbon still stays in the atmosphere. It's not like, well, later we get solar and so we'll be cool in the end. It's terrible that they have such a strong champion in the White House right now during a critical period immediately preceding renewables really taking over.
So, by the way, there's a great tweet you didn't read, but you pulled it up. Trump from 2012, March of 2012. Mm-hmm. Pathetic, Barack Obama did not want to veto Keystone himself, so he lobbied the Democrats in the Senate to defeat it. How's that pathetic? It just seems like governing.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to do it.
That's
I don't want to do it by executive
hypocrisy.
Order. I'm going to sort of
see if we
done
can get a consensus
see if
here.
We can get a consensus and do it legislatively.
Well, at least he's not having it both ways. Yeah. He's not attacking him for his executive orders.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so unfortunate story there, but important that you know what's going on. With that, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to touch base again with the Senate version of the tax plan and the current debate over that after this.
Once.
Oh, wow, that was abrupt. Well, and we're back. Okay, so I'll leave that for later. Anyway, we got far more for you. I'm John, Michael, and Ben, if you weren't here for the first segment. We've got some tweets we want to read. Let's see, first story about the pipeline. We've got a few tweets about that. Connor Lavone saying, it's only been a day since the leak. It's too soon to politicize. That's true.
That's good.
And I would say, well, then we definitely can't let them rule on the expansion going through.
You get free stuff for a good tweet.
I mean, you get a
Jenk sometimes.
Sometimes he does.
Jenk sometimes. Yeah. I think that guy.
Let's give them a free thing for that.
I have no idea how that's done, but I will say you get one.
Yeah, how about
hopefully
this?
Somebody's listening.
There's a 71% chance that you're going to get something for that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe a shirt.
But how do we even know where he is?
Maybe nothing.
Fake contact on Twitter, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get 77%.
El Duende Chingon says, here's a lofty way to keep the oil out of the water supply. Leave it in the fucking ground where it belongs. That is
very
true.
Solid.
And
I would have laughed harder, but we didn't have enough shirts to give away.
But that's the only one. We would have to take the shirt off our back. And Gabby Morita says, so for Thanksgiving this year, we're making Native Americans clean up an oil spill that stained what little land they have left. Yeah, that seems about par for the course for Trump's America.
Yeah.
That is true.
That's thoughtful.
Yeah, and there's some memes going around about the terrible situation last Thanksgiving in that part of the world where it was even more violent. Anyway, with that, why don't we jump back into the news? Across the country, we're having a debate about the Republican tax plan, and that debate can get very heated because of the consequences of it being passed, the huge sums of money that we're talking about, the huge tax cuts and all that, and tax increases on many Americans. And it can also get heated inside of the Senate, it turns out. And in this video, we've got Republican Senator Orrin Hatch fighting with Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown over exactly what the goal of this plan is. Let's take a look.
I come from the poor people. And I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes it.
Just, I'm not through. Okay. I get kind of sick and tired of it. Now, true, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular order,
country,
Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Regular order. We do a tax cut, middle class, and over and over again.
How many times do we do this before we learn this, Mr. Chairman?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap.
I've honored you by letting you spout off. Do you not feel honored?
to be fair, that did make it seem like Sherrod Brown had not spoken before and that Hatch was just banging the gavel when he was trying to make his argument. He did make a rather aggressive argument before that clip began.
Yeah. And so look,
which was great.
This is going to be an admission of a form of weakness, but I'm enough of a libby-lib that like, when even like Orrin Hatch, when he goes, I've worked my whole life to help the working people, I feel like as a lib, like, wait, maybe he did. No, he didn't. What are you talking about? Like, I feel for it for a second.
He put it accurately. His whole stinking career.
Exactly.
He's worked at it, right?
But I mean, also, you're rich now. But I mean, it's not about you. We're not talking about you. I'm not talking about you. You represent people. We're passing a bill that affects millions. What your dad did when you were born does not make it, this is in no way relevant.
Yeah.
Sherrod Brown might say, I was born wealthy. I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. None of that matters now.
Yeah.
We have evidence here, and really no evidence, substantial, significant, backed up evidence to the contrary of who this bill helps and who it hurts. It's not complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, the only way that his point could make any rational sense is if you do firmly believe, against all the evidence that we've seen in our lives, that trickle-down economics works, and if you simply shower the wealthy with money, some of it will eventually be passed on. Or much more directly to this bill, if you effectively eliminate corporate taxes, that they will, against all the evidence we're going to show you later in the show, immediately plow that back into the economy and there will be jobs and there will be prosperity.
Yeah, well, and go to what they were talking about beforehand, right? I mean, this was an amendment that was put in by Ron Wyden, the senator from Oregon.
Who, by the way, sitting next to Orrin Hatch.
Next to Orrin Hatch, right. So he puts that amendment in. And all it does is exactly to the individual tax cut what they're doing to the corporate tax cut. The corporate tax cut is a permanent tax cut from 35 to 20%. The individual goes down, but it sunsets. So then it ends, right? So what they're saying is, all right, make it so that the corporate tax cut ends if they don't prove that lower taxes will create jobs. They mm-hmm. have to show that they are putting that into, not to create jobs, higher wages, right?
Yeah.
And Sherrod Brown was saying they're sitting on a ton of cash right now, these big corporations, and wages aren't going up. So if you're going to put this in the bill, Wyden's amendment says, that's fine. We'll give it to you. It's top heavy. It helps individuals right away, and then it stops helping them. But you have to put the same sunset on it for the corporations if they don't create higher wages. And that's what they're arguing about. Yeah. That's what Orrin Hatch is so upset about, an amendment to create higher wages for working Americans.
And of course, you're being far too charitable there, because we know about all of the individual tax little manipulations that they do, the quadrupling of taxes on graduate students. And some of this is going to be different between the Senate and the House, of course. But the fact that they took away the tax credit for adopting. And then when the Democrats tried to add that back in by changing the corporate tax reduction from going down to 20% to going down to 20.05%, it was unanimously voted down by the Republicans. So we know that they're not actually, some of those tax decreases for lower wage workers, first of all, are gonna save them almost nothing at that point, because we're talking about small sums of money. And are temporary and are completely swamped by the changes to pass-through income and, of course, the corporate tax as well.
And if you actually believed
that these would create jobs, you would have no problem with that amendment. You would be like, okay, we have to show you that it raises wages. I firmly believe that it will, and so we will show you that. It should be obvious. But you do have a problem with it if you know that it's not true.
Right.
And there's no mechanism
for showing it.
Well, we do know, of course, because I mean, look, we've done a million videos about this, but even just recently, so TYT Investigates has been focusing very heavily on some of the lobbying efforts of particular corporations and what they have done during previous periods of tax cuts and especially tax holidays. These huge periods of repatriation of foreign wealth coming back in and what they actually do with that money. And the pattern is immediately clear. In some cases, it goes to dividends, which you can argue maybe helps out people because that theoretically they could have shares. But almost inevitably is also followed by almost no job increases or in many cases job decreases as well. There's simply no evidence for what Orrin Hatch is saying there.
Right.
But we do know what we're always expected to do
in America.
What we're always expected to do in America is have this conversation about tax cuts and what they'll do. And they will say, here's all these things we think will happen down the line, that it will lead to jobs or it'll lead to wages or whatever. All that stuff hypothetically could happen. But we know immediately what will happen. The wealthy will save tons of money. Corporations will save tons of money. Maybe someday the good stuff happens, but we always get those inevitable changes. And that's what Sherrod Brown and others have a big problem with, that this seems designed specifically to help only corporations and the wealthiest Americans, even though you could easily write a bill that simplifies the tax code and provides some sort of stimulus or help to those who are lower, middle, working class, all that. Hell, Obama did it with the actual stimulus. You could do that if you wanted to. You say that's what you want, but you don't actually write that bill.
Well, the good thing about what Sherrod Brown did is that is point out that this doesn't do what they say that they want to do, because they're not honest about doing what they want to do. Mm-hmm. They're not honest. They don't say what they want to do. What they want to do is they don't care if the Treasury takes in no money. They don't care if it's revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. They want it to take in less money. That's not their problem. And then they want to cut programs.
Yeah.
Like that's how this works. That's the plan. That's what they've always wanted to do. They're not
like Chip. I mean, you heard him saying Chip.
Right. Exactly like Chip, the children's health insurance program.
Exactly. Actually, we have a little video about that. Why don't we touch on that in the second video.
And let me just say something. If we worked together, we could pull this country out of every mess it's in. And we could do a lot of the things that you're talking about, too. And I think I've got a reputation of having worked together with Democrats.
Let's start with Chip.
Not starting with Chip. I did it. I've done it for years. I've got more bills.
Start with Chip today.
I got more bills passed than everybody on this committee put together. And they've been passed for the benefit of people in this country. Now, all I can say is I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bullcrap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right. And I just, it takes a lot to get me worked up like this.
To do it right at the end. No one during this entire process or for the rest of time has talked about how this is benefiting the rich.
Well, and also to do it right at the end. They held this bill so long, there was only right was, at the yeah, end to do it.
There was only the end.
This was not a process.
And the House didn't even have a hearing about it, I don't believe.
when they kicked off, there were 6 minutes and 24 seconds to play in the fourth quarter.
You can only do it right at the end.
About how they're attempting to ram it through. Originally by Thanksgiving, now they look like they want to get it before the special election in Alabama, because obviously that changes their chances of getting it passed.
I've passed, what did he say? I've passed more bills than everybody on this committee combined, and you see Charles Grassley. Yeah. No.
Also, you're 1,000. That's just numerically possible. Yeah. Does that mean anything about your work ethic? I'm not sure.
And regular order. When they talk about regular order, this set of Republicans in the Senate right now who let Merrick Garland slide away from our memories, and that was regular order. And they, where were they on regular order when Merrick Garland's name was presented by the president for the Supreme Court?
The one positive, of course, is that while he's going to sit there and try to say that nobody buys this idea that it's benefiting the wealthy, the polls are in, and I think something like 16% of the population thinks that they will personally financially benefit from this, which is still probably too high. But that's way better than the last few times we've had this debate as a country, back during Bush and all that.
And by the way, there is, as I read today, and you know, Ben Cardin's proposal in the Senate, the Progressive Consumption Tax Act, accomplishes everything that Republicans say they want, but it's actually a progressive tax, and it actually puts a little money into the poorest Americans and reduces by a little under 1% the money that the richest Americans would take home. They'd give up less money in this, and it reduces the corporate tax rate to, I think, 17%.
And that
plan, which is about 4 years old now, off and on, it's been evaluated by the Tax Policy Center with a couple of and it lowers the top tax brackets to 15, 25, and 28. And it says it somewhere in there, but if it's like 15, 14, 27, and 31 instead of that, then it's completely revenue neutral. Mm-hmm. Like, and it accomplishes what they say they want. It's proof that what they say they want isn't what they want.
Right.
They want to cut taxes. They'd like to cut taxes for everybody, but really, because the rich people do pay the most taxes, they want to cut that, and they want the government to have less money, and then it'll be able to fund less stuff when they go, hey, we don't have enough money. What are we going to do, raise taxes?
Yeah,
nobody wants to raise taxes.
Right. And all these machinations come from the desire to pass this without having to get a single Democrat to vote with them. They wouldn't be bound by that $1.5 trillion thing if they were really doing anything to get some Democrats.
It's not just the Democrats, to vote with. But now they're in great peril, and they already have lost some Republicans.
Yeah. Because they lost Ron Johnson.
I know.
Who loses Ron Johnson?
Ron Johnson, who's got 5 years left in his Senate career, and
we thought that 6 years ago.
No, but at least 5 years left. But it's not like he's up next year, and
Wisconsin doesn't want that. That's what I'm saying.
Of course, he is politically safe for the moment.
Totally.
And he went against this thing, and then of course Susan Collins will. And that's why these Republicans are going to go to another story, which I guess we're not really covering. But that's why politically they're so scared about that Alabama Senate seat too.
Yeah.
You know, because they're this close on so many of these issues, and that's why they're really hurrying this thing through to try and get it passed before Doug Jones might be seated in the Senate.
So why don't we turn to the second aspect of this? We've got some really amazing video for you. One of the claims that Republicans are making is that we need to drastically cut the corporate tax, because that will lead to an explosion of growth for reasons you can read about in Harry Potter. The Wall Street Journal, though, recently held a meeting of CEOs with Trump's chief economic advisor, Gary Cohn. And let's find out if the CEOs believe that that's likely to happen. Let's take a look at this.
If the tax reform bill goes through, do you plan to increase investment, your company's investment, capital investment? Just a show of hands, the tax reform goes through? Okay.
Why aren't the other hands up?
Why aren't the other hands up?
John, I've got a question for Gary quickly.
Why aren't the other hands up?
Because these are smart people, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm kind of shocked that in that particular forum, the video cameras are on, by the...
Everybody who runs a corporation's not an ogre, right? They don't want to lie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, they don't want to get caught lying. They're like, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. We'll see, but I got to pay off my shareholders and I got to.
Illustrative of the fact that the Senate and these Republican senators are totally disconnected from the reality of what's going to happen.
Of course, because as I'm saying, they're not going to lie because they know they won't. Right? Yeah. They don't think it's the...
And that doesn't mean that they won't benefit, of course. they will get that money. They just don't necessarily intend in putting it back into the actual company and doing all that
or
sort of
wages development. Or higher
or wages as well. Like I would have loved to have seen that question.
Yeah,
will
that
you raise
been,
wages right. if we shower you with all this money?
No, they won't because they haven't yet, and they have all this money.
Of course, yeah. of course. They've been doing very well. Trump keeps talking about the stock market, but are wages going up? No. Why? The corporations are doing so well. Weird how that works out. Steve Mnuchin,
Mnuchin.
I know, I pronounce it differently every time I say it.
Oh, okay.
I despise it.
Sorry.
So pictured back here auditioning for the next Batman movie. He was asked about this, why it is that they won't pledge to do the sorts of things the tax bill debate is sort of founded on. And here is his response.
If the tax reform bill goes through, do you plan to increase investment, your company's investment, capital investment, just a show of hands, the tax reform goes through? Okay.
Why aren't the other hands up?
Why aren't they up, Mr. Secretary?
Well, must have been a tired crowd there. I've literally met with hundreds and hundreds of business executives, big business, small business. Everybody's very excited about this. And I can tell you all the international companies I've spoken with think a 20% corporate tax on a territorial system is going to bring back a lot of jobs and trillions of dollars here into the economy. Yep. We have lots of people who are lined up in support of this, the Business Roundtable, financial services. There's a lot of excitement about this plan.
When his batteries run out,
exactly. There's something up with him. So that must have been a tired crowd,
right?
That's one way to spin it, I guess. But the thing
he's
is,
very
again,
funny. This secretary,
he's the best. Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright's gang just needs to take him back into the lab and fix the upper lip.
It's a Westworld. Westworld thing. Nice. Yeah. I had to identify the actor in my mind. I think having. That group of CEOs come together is interesting. We can gather some data from that. But we also, like we've said in the show already, we know how this goes. We know what they do with the money already. So I looked up S&P Global said back in May of 2017 that the 2000 S&P globally rated businesses were currently sitting on $1.9 trillion that they just have. Now, we've talked before. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But why is it that doesn't suddenly improve the economy? Well, you can take the most basic economics course in the world and read about supply and demand, and you'll understand that simply giving them more money does not produce a demand for their products. It certainly doesn't produce the financial ability to buy more of those products. You could do that if you wanted to, but that's not their strategy. They simply think, oh, you give the businesses a bunch of money, then there's a phase two that I don't really understand. Then phase three, everything's better all of a sudden. Right. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't
even- I'm an idiot. I've never had more than like... Yeah. $7,000 to my name, but I agree with the CEOs there. It's not going to happen.
I don't have any faith that they even think it'll work. I mean, I got it. I don't think that they're evil. I certainly don't think.
I'm trying to appeal to the people who trust them. Unfortunately,
It's a lie. We're being lied to. This isn't what they want. What they want is to pay less in corporate tax. They think it's outrageous that they pay this high a corporate tax, and it should be less. And that it strangles the ability of CEOs and business leaders to make as much money for their company as they want. The money that will then, as we now know, since whenever we started making paying off the shareholders the only thing that mattered, that's what they're supposed to do. And that the country's fine, and things will work out. But by the way, government's too involved. They regulate too much, they tell us what to do too much, and they waste a lot of money. So ultimately, if the government makes a little less money out of this, because they'll get less corporate tax, and as this tax plan passes, they'll get less tax from people, they'll raise less from the income tax, then we'll just have to cut stuff, which is what we should have done in the first place, which is what they want.
Which is what,
But they don't say that. I mean, sometimes at least this is those moments when people like Rand Paul in bizarre ways, because he's more likely to go, we should have less money. We should pay for less of these things, and the people we shouldn't break the backs of Americans to fund all these things we do. We should do less.
Yeah,
and these aren't also people who necessarily, unlike other Republican presidents, supported this president. I mean, these business leaders don't necessarily trust Donald Trump either. And that's a big part of what goes into the fact that he put these business leaders in big positions, the Wilbur Rosses and Steve Mnuchin, so that they would be more comfortable, because he was not terribly popular with that crowd during the election.
Certainly tax cuts have been and will always be.
Well, I know, but they were confident that they would have gotten them regardless of who won.
Exactly,
And they didn't like him. But that said, you know what Ben said is true: is that these are smart people too, who they want something, and they're not just going to say something if it isn't true. And I mean, they will, but they're en masse, they're not going to like that.
Yeah, it really is amazing though that if they get this, you know, I don't know what exactly the final bill will look like, because the Senate and the House bill look different. They have to reconcile that and all that. But how many different benefits they get, that they get to give all that money to the corporations and all that. Some of that will come back to them in donations, obviously. There will be a lot of really happy, wealthy people who will help them out. They starve the federal treasury so that eventually they can justify cuts of any number of progressive policies to help to balance the books in the end. They throw ridiculous things in, like additional taxes on university endowments, because screw universities. They have a personhood amendment in one version of the bill that's going around right now. Has nothing to do with anything, but why not throw it in? This tax bill has suddenly just become everything that they want.
And by the way, and 13 million people off healthcare.
Exactly, right. As well. We just throw them off their healthcare. They couldn't get it the first time around.
And
they get it the second time.
They're not angry about that coming in late. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Not talking about that.
Where's the wait a second, this healthcare thing?
Yeah, before we beat this six times. So, right. You know, yeah. And here at the end, you try and do it. Thinking on this bill, the last
ridiculous.
Second.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and to go briefly back to Hatch, I know that it's been a bit, but saying that, you know, the idea that we're doing this and that this is going to help out the rich, I'm from the low and middle class. I want to help them. NBC News had a financial analysis done of the likely effects of the Senate version of the bill on a particular one wealthy person, not hypothetically all wealthy people, but let's take one. You might have heard of Ms. Donald Trump. He would save more than $20 million personally, just himself, according to analysis of his 2005 tax return. And his heirs could potentially save $1.1 billion based on his reported wealth if this bill goes through. By the way, that's based on a reported wealth of $2.85 billion, estimated idea of his wealth. He claims he has far more, and if that's true, they could save potentially billions of dollars.
And he's also 71 years old, and most of that savings comes from the fact that according to the Senate bill in 2024, the estate tax will be repealed, and that's where he gets his greatest savings on his wealth.
Exactly. It's an amazing, system they've built up. I mean, thankfully, as you said, oh my God, now I'm blanking on the name of the senator who came against it. Ron Johnson is against it. I saw that Susan Collins, I believe, was sort of hesitant. I think Murkowski
know with Rand Paul either on these things.
Exactly. Yeah, he's a bizarre one. I read, maybe it's changed. He's the only senator who hasn't taken his endorsement away from Roy Moore. That's what I read.
I read that too.
Bizarre.
As bizarre as the thing that happened. Like, I'm sorry, you're going to make a point that's important. This is just silly, but it's not really. So, like, there's something missing still from that story with getting his ribs broken.
Oh yeah, with the Rand Paul story. Yeah,
there's more to it.
I don't remember what I was going to say, but I'm sure it was
the Rand Paul vote. When I said
he was he's the only person right now to come out against Roy Moore. But yeah, I mean there. I was going to say about. And we don't, as John McCain said, he'd support it.
No, we don't know about
John McCain. Just because I feel like there's a little bit of John McCain. It's, I'm going to wait until the last possible second on every bill I have left.
Right.
And I'm going to vote against the president.
Right. With all the consequences in the immediate term and just the ripples that go out years and decades in the future from this bill, I don't want to be like sitting watching TV to see if he gives it the thumb down at the last second. Like,
there's going to be
way too important.
I believe they're going to peel something off of this. They're going to find something that doesn't have to go through reconciliation that they're going to be able to vote on before Thanksgiving that gives them something to take home. I don't know what it's going to be. I think it's going to be, it might be a small, it might be a standalone, something the Senate, through their rules, can actually vote on and get done, because
with Democratic support or
without Democrat, but no. with the Murkowskis of the world and the Collinses,
right.
And
something that get 51 Republicans to back,
because otherwise this administration is on a legislative level
the worst
ever, historically a failure, and that's as objective as I can be. I mean, we know that I cannot bear this man, but objectively speaking,
legislatively nothing. Everything's been by executive order.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. So they're going to have to, and that falls on the Congress too, because they're the next ones up. So they're going to have to come home with something.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, the New York Times had an incredibly intriguing story of their original reporting coming out of Iraq. We're going to be breaking that down when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Power Panel on the Young Turks today. What's going on? It's a special day, isn't it, Ben?
Well, John and Michael, Shop TYT's 10 days of Black Friday sale. It's here. It's here right now. Text DEAL to 228-466 to stay up to date on the daily promotions, like today's free shipping on orders over $100, but only if you use the code FREAKOUT. Once again, the code FREAKOUT, free shipping on orders over $100 today.
So, Ben, all I have to do is 228-466, and I can get in on that?
Well, you have to text DEAL to 228-466, and you can get, that'll keep you up to date on daily promotions like today's.
Great. So that's DEAL at 228-466.
Yeah, and free shipping, but you have to use the code FREAKOUT.
Excellent. FREAKOUT is the code.
Jesus.
Before we get into this.
Okay.
Ben and I talk a lot about, we're somewhat sarcastic, but... about when people take you literally, and this is just a beauty.
On Twitter, every day.
Every day. You say something sarcastic, you get like 44 replies, right? Or 12 or 7. There's a percent, there's always going to be one that says, oh, that's not really true. This is a beauty. Someone who goes by the Young Feminist says, Michael Shore made a really naive statement saying pipeline leaks create cleanup jobs when I was talking about the president saying that. One other person said, learn to sarcasm. This guy, Jamie Robertson, said he wasn't being serious. Chill. She writes back, first of all, no thanks. I'm already cold. Right. I know. Maybe she was being
Guardians of the Galaxy.
And second, he wasn't. He suggested that jobs are created by these leaks. He wasn't saying it was a good thing, just that it was a thing. I was making a joke. The president said that the pipeline creates jobs and it's leaking. Those aren't the jobs he meant.
I shared an article from The Onion. It was Area Man worried his years of sexual harassment will lead to an accountability and responsibility or something like
yeah,
that.
I remember
it's
that.
Just something like that. And somebody responded on Twitter, you know The Onion's fake, right? And I respond to them, you know everybody knows The Onion's fake, right? And I thought that would be the end of it, but it's Twitter. So he responded, it's really irresponsible because some of your viewers might not know that. And I'm like, that was the headline. It was Area Man worried about consequences for years of sexual harassment.
Therefore,
like, it's obviously a joke. What are you talking about?
Therefore, The Onion is irresponsible. They're all right. One on Twitter. Yeah. The Onion,
the Onion great... should just say everything like in big letters before every article. This is a joke, right?
Yeah, there was a picture on the, I guess the Obamas went on with Mario Lopez. I don't know if it was recent. I don't know when it was or something. I think it was Mario Lopez. It was very, whoever it was that was super dimpled. And but it was Barack and Michelle Obama. And the headline was just Obamas reunite on live TV for the first time since leaving the White House.
See, that's good.
It did it. Look,
they marked it as a joke, right? Because that's irresponsible.
Yeah, right, totally. Yeah.
But they've been together the whole time.
They've been together, I think, the whole time. So
that's
it was just
not, that's
wrong.
Not fair to say.
Okay, a couple of your tweets before we get back into the news. Rafer Madness saying, in reference to the tax debate, this is all political theater. They're simply arguing about whether you get fucked in the eye or the ear. I don't know why you're implying that distinction doesn't matter. I feel like we could all pretty much agree that ear is preferable, right?
Yeah.
Gotta save the eye. Let's see. And Matthew Reed with a slightly more serious take on this. When you cut taxes, the people that benefit most have a low marginal propensity to spend. They are unlikely to actually spend much of the money that they get from the tax cuts, hence no increase in demand and no new jobs. Exactly. Unless you can show that the millionaires are already maxing out their credit cards every single day and not saving that money, then maybe that would help. But so long as it's just going into, like that doesn't actually directly help the economy.
Every millionaire, for every million every millionaire has, they get $4,000 on the Senate tax bill.
Yeah?
That's like, if you have $2 million, you get $8,000 back.
That sounds good.
It does sound good.
I take that. Yeah. And we want to thank two of our members before we get back into the news. Member Linda Leese. And member Solomon Bisangwa, thank you for supporting TYT and allowing us to cover the news at all. Okay, back into some important stuff. Discussions of our current endless wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria in a lot of the media has a tendency to focus on the particularly high-tech nature of the weapons used. We have this idea, you know, they're described as smart weapons, they're super accurate. Very rarely do we focus on the people. It's more on, man, we really have some amazing, accurate weapons. But some new reporting actually from the New York Times might lead you to believe that we were misled about how minimal the civilian casualties have been in those conflicts. And so I want to give credit to Asmat Khan and Anand Gopal for their reporting here. But here are some numbers to consider. The coalition, this is particular to Iraq, has conducted more than 27,500 strikes to date with everything from, you know, B-52s and to Predator drones. According to the coalition's available data, 89 of its more than 14,000 airstrikes in Iraq have resulted in civilian deaths.
This is since the beginning of the Iraq war or since the beginning of the fight against ISIS?
For Iraq in particular, the 14,000 airstrikes?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure about the timeline. I know that they've restricted it specifically there. I believe that it's capped out at the beginning is during the fight in ISIS. I don't believe it's from the beginning of the war, but feel free to check that. In any event, the comparison between the two is roughly likely to be as true if you extend it back farther. So that would amount to about one in every 157 strikes results in civilian deaths, which automatically, if you pay attention to the news, should probably be a little bit suspicious there. But the New York Times decided to send some of its reporters to the ground in Iraq to investigate some of these issues. Now, they're saying overall in the coalition, since August of 2014, it has killed tens of thousands of ISIS fighters and 466 civilians in Iraq. Okay, that's the sum total the coalition says has been killed, give or take a few. But to the New York Times, between April of 2016 and June of 2017, they visited the sites of nearly 150 airstrikes across northern Iraq not long after ISIS was evicted from those locations. And then they did a variety of different ways of sort of gathering information, interviewing people, gathering intelligence on the ground, talking with some of the military in the region, examining bomb fragments, looking at local news sources, and those sorts of things. In five of the coalition strikes they identified that resulted in civilian death, one in five of the coalition strikes they identified resulted in civilian death, a rate more than 31 times that acknowledged by the coalition. Now, they're saying that it's likely that it's actually higher than that because of the difficulty of getting accurate information. But already, the difference between one in five and one in 157, that's not simply a different way of measuring it. That requires a great degree of willful ignorance and misleading of the public to imply that your weapons are that accurate against the eyewitness testimony of people in that region, those who have lost family members and friends in that region. Recently, there was video put up of a supposed bomb-making factory that was bombed, and the New York Times talked to the people who had lived in that building. They were civilian homes. It was not a factory, and that's just one of literally hundreds that have been identified as not being what the military has initially said they were when they were bombed.
I think if you were to extrapolate that from, what do we say, 466 civilians killed?
That's what the coalition is saying
right.
During that period.
If you, they say 31 times more than that, or at least 31 times more we killed civilians in a strike that we acknowledge, so it's possible that we've killed 31 times as many civilians as that.
Yeah. I mean, Air Wars says it's at least thousands in that region during this time.
15,000 if that were near it.
Potentially, Air Wars says lower, but they also say, again, it's so difficult to get accurate information. It's possible it's many times
30
higher.
30 times 466.
Yeah.
Is 13,980. So that's 14,000 civilians, not 466 civilians. And maybe that, you know, I don't know that number is true either, but it suggests that we're looking at a five-digit number or a high four-digit number and not a mid-three-digit number.
Yeah, which both means that they are killing far, far more civilians than they've said, but also that they're killing far fewer ISIS members.
And we'll relate it back briefly to the last story because we don't even talk about it. I mean, we run into the same problem because it's so far out of the of the regular conversation that we have about taxes and tax cuts and funding the government. But, you know, we just passed another military spending bill with huge Democratic support, right? And it didn't really even get debated.
Yeah.
Right. We don't have a debate.
Spending
about
more than Trump had even requested.
Right. We just spend on these. We'll spend on what kills people. We will not spend on what saves people. And I'm not suggesting that we not have a military. I'd like us to get out of these wars. I think that overall, if we didn't participate in these wars, we would see a stunningly different kind of American yeah. foreign policy. There would be some downsides, no question. But the fact that we don't, as a country, think, what was the bill? Do you know off the top of your head what the military's funding, what the authorization was?
644, is that what
I was? I thought it was 700 billion. Yeah. But
maybe it was the president region. Asked for 644 and they That's gave possible. Him 700.
I thought it was 800, but maybe you guys are all say 700 billion. Whatever. I mean, that we don't even have a conversation of, what if we gave them 400 billion?
Yeah.
Right? You know, and here's 425 yeah. billion to go around the world
How
every
crappy. And
by the way, you'll get it again next year.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
And by the way,
I'm not signing you to a 1-year contract.
We do this like every year. It's not like if you only spent $200 billion this year, then you've got a real crappy military. Yeah, look, we already have all this stuff.
Right.
Obviously, there's maintenance and pay and all of that.
We obviously, as a percentage of our whatever you call it, this is where I'm at, gross
GDP.
National, I don't know.
Gross domestic
We
product.
Spend more on the military than anybody else, and not just
far,
because
far
we
more.
Can, but we spend, as a percentage, we spend more than anybody else, and we don't have a conversation about whether we need to.
Yeah.
That's marginalized to Barbara Lee, right? You know, she's the person yeah. who talks about that. And like, oh, Barbara Lee, she voted against the war in Afghanistan, right?
Yeah.
We don't have a meaningful conversation among, and that, when people who are to our left make that point, I find them to be 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
They are just right as can be that somehow the Democratic Party has not at any point stood up in a meaningful way in a the way the leadership of the party should have, the way you'd hope they would have, and questioned yeah. whether it's okay because they're afraid that they'll
afraid.
Be called soft, and so or they believe it, or maybe they just
right.
think
and like you know more so even than guns or any of these lobbies, the raw facts of the way the House of Representatives is made up is that it's made up of people who represent districts,
right.
Democrat and Republican. Where the military is such yeah. a big part of the economy in their district.
And they've helped to create that in the military.
No, they
purposefully
didn't help
to,
they
distributing.
Created it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They did it with this
yeah.
with this goal in mind.
Exactly. And a lot
successful.
Of people, like if you talk to regular people, man, they mostly think we should be spending more. They couldn't tell you if it's $700 billion a year or $100 billion a year, but they know it should be higher.
Yeah.
It's weird how that works out.
Should build a wall, too.
We should. But I want to talk about, so we're talking about this increased civilian casualty rate, and here yeah. is a case study of how terrible this is, not just objectively, but directly in comparison to the ISIS occupation that had been ongoing in this area. During the 2 years that ISIS ruled downtown Qayyarah, an area of about 1 square mile, there were 40 airstrikes, 13 of which killed 43 civilians, 19 men, 8 women, and 16 children. In the same period, according to the Iraqi Federal Police, ISIS executed 18 civilians. And so far more people were actually dying from the airstrikes than from the ISIS occupation. Now, that doesn't mean that, of course, there aren't tons of other consequences of ISIS being in that area. But in sheer blood, our strikes
yeah,
were
and
worse.
And let's be clear about what we're saying, because they're going to be, you know, the clowns out there who listen to this show are going to suggest that we're equating the United States military and ISIS, right? And that
yeah.
we're worse, we're yeah. nearly 3 times more deadly than they are, which would appear in that town we are. The question is, what's the result? I mean, first of all, there's the ownership of that. What does it mean that we killed 43 people who were innocent, whose only crime was that they were terrorized by the most terrifying and awful people on the planet, right? Or among the most terrifying and awful people on the planet. And I mean ISIS, like that their
yeah.
lives were ruined by ISIS until we dropped a bomb on it and they thought, oh wait, it can get worse, right?
Yeah.
So we have to take ownership of that, and there's a moral responsibility there which we're not interested as a people to examine. But then of course, what we talk about frequently, what we pay a price for that. There's a tangible effect that
yeah.
that has. Like what, and do we spend a lot of time thinking about that? We spend a lot of time talking about it. I don't know that we spend a lot of time thinking, what does
yeah.
it mean? Because again, as we often say, those 43 people, they had 137 children, and some of them were children, of course, and they had wives, and they have uncles, and they have cousins, and those are all people who, many of whom now will hate America, right?
Yeah.
And see America as a killer from the sky, right? So I don't know what the solution is, but I know that we ought to be talking about that, and we ought to be talking about it in an incredibly meaningful
yeah.
way, in the same way that we ought to have meaningful conversations about what we spend on
yeah.
the military.
Yeah, I've said it before. I want to say it one more time, and it's a bizarre idea, and I'm willing to accept modifications to it. But I think especially considering the fact that the Senate and the House look like they're not going to accomplish anything for the rest of until the midterms. So I think we can set aside 6 months where we have this is going to be the biggest thing like it in the history of our country. 6 months of hearings where the heads of the military and the corporations that supply it go in every day. It's on TV. And we go through on a map every single country where we have soldiers and bases, and the military makes the case for why we have to continue that. And then we go through the top 100 expenses of the military, the programs, the exercises, all of that. And they make the case directly to the American public why we need to be in these places and why we need to be funding these programs. Because as long as it's cloaked behind, and we're out there, we've got a lot of stuff, we need a lot of stuff, I don't think people really realize how big the numbers are. But when we're talking about why the hell do we have 700 soldiers in this African country nobody even knows exists? Why are we doing that? I think that we can afford to give a year to it.
3,000 and 5,000 on the British island of Diego Garcia off of Mauritius near Africa. I mean,
what percentage of the American public knows that?
Yeah, very, very few.
And they should know that.
At max, two of the three people at this table. I'll tell you that right now.
Right.
Anyway, I think that that would be a great exercise for our country to finally spend a significant amount of time, both on the government side and our personal side in the media, coming to grips with the military empire that we have developed and whether certain parts of it could perhaps be curtailed. Anyway, I think we have just a tiny bit of time. Can you get ready with videos 7 and 8? I'm going to jump ahead. Let's lighten things up before we throw to the second hour. Get ready to be horrified. Here is a demonstration of the brand new capabilities of actually something related to this last video, the Boston Dynamics Robot Atlas.
Is that a thing a lot of people are going to want their robot to do?
I don't know, but...
Do they show the guy afterwards? Does he say what it was like?
What's that?
Does he say what it was like being in that suit?
The guy in the suit?
Yeah. It's not really a guy, unfortunately.
Really?
It was a 6'9" robot. We've previously seen videos of it, you know, like walking and stuff like that, recovering from being shoved.
So the robot's name is Atlas?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, because I thought that it was a robot Atlas.
Right, he's going to say, and this is where Diego Garcia
right,
is.
Right, exactly. The best route to get from Denver, Colorado, to Helena, Montana.
But so there you see it failing. So look, this entire thing is actually...
That wasn't bad attention.
So show the fail one more time.
That was great. Oh yeah, you can see it go wrong.
No, he sets his
landing. He's trying. This one is just, he had a little bit of trouble.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah.
The Russian judge, not going to like that. Oh.
I thought it was super weak when he was jumping from blue... sort of whatever that
boxes
is,
or
blue
yeah.
boxed, and then it was, but it was too far, so he just jumped on the ground first.
And then he jumped on the big one.
Yeah.
But, right, well, yeah. Look, if you haven't been following these robots, and I actually have, that's amazingly difficult. I mean, it's a 6'9", extremely heavy, extremely complicated robot that can now do backflips. I mean, can anyone at this table do a backflip? I couldn't even do the failed backflip.
No, but I'm not 6'9", so
that's true.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. I mean, it really was. Freakish.
Once you can get to that, I mean, God knows in a year.
But
in 10
I also
years,
like that
people.
It kind of screwed up too. I
mean, it's not perfect.
Right, yeah. Right. So yeah. I mean, I see this and I think, look, that's not going to make our lives easier. That's not collecting my laundry. That's getting a gun and that's going to fight. And that's
probably
you know, right.
So that's one of the reasons.
And it's the military, so sometimes it'll
mess up,
fall down. Yeah.
It'll fall down and it'll mess up and shoot the wrong person. Yeah. So look, this isn't immediately necessarily a military thing, although their previous four-legged sort of pack animal robot has been tested by the military. But you can't look at that and have watched the movies that we've watched growing up and not think the military is looking at that. That is going to be one way, just like with unmanned vehicles in the air, they're going to be able to extend military power without the threat of actually losing a human.
American.
No, that's a good point. So, an American. And God knows what effect that'll actually have once it gets deployed. And those things, by the way, are not
going
to be cheap.
And then when it's all robots going, we really don't have to stand up for the national anthem, right?
The... Real quick, what movie did you think of first?
When I see that? I mean, yeah. I think of Terminator.
Yeah, I was Notting Hill, Michael.
Ordinary People.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Okay, I don't get that. But anyway.
You said the movies we grew up with.
Ninja Turtles. Right. I don't know. But anyway, look, for right now, that's an interesting technological thing, but it's going to have huge economic and especially military implications at some point. Okay, I wish we had time to talk about this last story. Right. What's that?
I just like it would have worked out. I knew you would say the right kind of movie, and then I would say something funny, and Michael would have ready something. And he went in a totally different genre.
See, I'm a fool. Yeah, I assumed you are a movie critic. You would have some sort of much earlier depiction of the threat of robots in war. But you got nothing. Okay. Anyway, thank you guys for most of that hour, not the end of it. Little bits in the middle I had problems with. But
well, right at the end. We waited right till the end.
Regular order.
I should have known when I put robots in there. Years ago, you're not going to remember, I put in a story similar to this about the Navy developing rail guns that could shoot, you know, 7 miles away, 20 miles away, or something like that. And you have never been more dismissive of a story than that railgun story.
That I believe.
It's important, okay? We need to know what the military is doing.
It is important.
Anyway, thank you for joining me, guys. One of you is going to be sticking around.
Yeah, I'm not.
But you can be seen at?
I can be seen on, you tell me, John.
I-24 News.
That's exactly
you know,
right.
I was going to give you the opportunity to talk
News,
a bit more.
I-24News.tv. It'll be on your cable stations.
Oh, yeah, but you know, right now it's there's an app.
Right, yeah.
You watch online. Watch and the app, which I have on my iPhone, which is charging over there, I'd show it to you right now. It's a really good app.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It goes quickly. It's got a lot of choices. It lists the shows well. You can keep up to date on news.
Awesome.
I mean, you want to know what's happening right now in Haifa. I'm just telling you.
That's where you're going to find
it. Download the I-24. No, it's a really good app.
It's a good straight news network, i24news.tv.
Damn, didn't get in there quick enough.
We couldn't comm it.
Well, maybe someday you can buy it out. Anyway, thank you for joining us, guys. There's going to be a short break. When we come back, second hour, Anna Kasparian, Ben, and I believe Brett's going to be here as well. Should be a lot of fun, so don't go anywhere.